Welcome to the Storytellers Telling Stories podcast. I'm Jude Brewer. There is a variety of ways you may listen.
Through phone speakers.
Your car stereo.
Your earbuds.
Regardless of the delivery system, we invite you to abandon the outside world and vanish for a short while. Wherever you are at the moment does not exist. This week's episode is titled The Isle of the Dead, written and narrated by Stephen Allred, with musical composition and a musical performance by Shane Brown. Do you hear it? It is the story of a hero. The fisherman on a quest to find his beloved, as she has written to him from her deathbed, urging him to come find her on the Isle of the Dead. After a rather unusual sea voyage, we join him now as he awakens on a strange shore.
When he woke next, the fisherman squinted into a bright but overcast sky above him. The sun was directly overhead. He was on a beach, and waves were lapping over his legs. A cuttlefish beak was in his hand. He was enormously tired, but his tongue was back to its normal size, and he was no longer thirsty. He lay there a long time, listening to the cluck and clatter of birds he could not see. They were behind him somewhere, having a long conversation. At long last, he felt enough strength to roll himself over on his side and then to sit up. The bird sounds behind him stopped for a moment and then resumed, louder and more upset than before. The sea was green. He was on an inlet, long and narrow, with rocky cliffs topped by fir trees. Giant fir trees, the like of which he had never seen before, not even in the fjords of the northern seas. His legs, below his knee breeches, were as white as an orca's belly, as were his forearms, his hands, his belly, his feet. He had lived every day of his life outdoors, and his skin had long since been tanned to the color of almonds. Yet here he was, an albino, washed up on a beach. He rubbed his eyes, which changed nothing, and then he closed them for a dozen slow breaths. But when he looked again, he was still bleached white. Had his eyes been magicked? He could not tell. He had been swallowed whole by a whale, had he not, and lived in the belly for days. Explanation enough for any number of strange things, he supposed, although it did not answer the question of how he had come to be here. He was on no coastline, he knew. He had no memory of leaving the whale's belly. The bird sounds were getting closer. The fisherman turned over onto his knees and stood his weary body upright. There were three birds walking across a sandy beach toward him. He blinked several times, trying to get his eyes to see them properly. He looked at the beak in his hand. It was proof that he really had been in the belly of a whale, that this was not all some strange and terrible enchantment. But what about his tongue? He had been dying of thirst, and now his tongue was back to its normal size. Perchance he was dreaming, because the birds coming his way were very large. They cleared the jumble of driftwood at the high tide line, and they had to be 6 feet tall. He dug the sharp point of the cuttlefish beak into the palm of his hand to wake himself up, but he did not wake. He only felt the pain he was causing himself. Worse, he realized that all along the birds had been speaking as humans speak. They had the throaty voices of birds, but they formed words the way a parrot does. But these were not parrots. And they were not simply repeating a human phrase over and over. They were talking. They were a cormorant, a pelican, and a crow. The cormorant wore a pair of spectacles pinched onto his bill in the manner of a scholar or a scribe. The pelican was perhaps the very one who had fed him a drop of blood. The crow stepped up to him and looked him up and down with one black eye. He leaned in with his beak so close that the fisherman saw the flat feathers lift up over the crow's nostrils when he sniffed at him. The crow stepped back and looked at him with his other eye. He puffed out his chest feathers. He opened his beak to speak, and the rank smell of carrion filled the fisherman's nose.
"You featherless piece of shite,"
the crow said.
"What brings you here?"
"Insults from a talking bird? What manner of varlet was this? Ye gods," the fisherman thought, "I must have sailed off the edge of the world, or been swum there by the great whale." The pelican cooed soothingly, as if to tell the fisherman that he was not entirely in agreement with the crow's phrasing. The cormorant stretched his neck, making himself taller than the crow, and looked down on the blackbird. His spectacles gave him the superior air of a barrister who has secretly bribed a judge. The crow paid him no mind. "Where am I?" the fisherman said.
"You stink," the crow said. "I thought you humans took baths now and again."
All the birds were circling him, looking him up and down, first with one eye, then the other, the cormorant regarding him over the top of his spectacles. The pelican stopped in front of him.
"Are you lost?"
His long bill lay against his chest, and his yellow eye was not so unfriendly as the crow's.
"How do you come to be here?"
"We know how he got here,"
the crow said, but before he could continue, the pelican turned and spread his wings, shielding the man from the crow. He shook his wide wings, rattling his feathers.
"However he arrived here," the pelican said, "this man is our guest."
The crow scratched at the sand and uttered several harsh caws.
"Guest, you say? Not my guest. He's trouble. Anybody can see that. Look at the mischief he's already caused."
"Mischief?" the fisherman said. "What mischief? I've only just got here." He didn't like these birds, especially the crow, whose black eyes regarded him as if he were nothing more than flotsam, and maybe worth a peck to test his flavor. The cormorant and the pelican had bills long enough to grab the fisherman by the throat and strangle him. His knife was gone, lost when he was swallowed by the whale. All he had to defend himself with was the cuttlefish beak, and they would rip him to pieces before he could do them much damage. Perhaps he could distract them with flattery. "Friend Crow, are you one of the gods of this place?"
"I'm no crow, you fool," the crow said. "I am Raven, and I am the king of the dead."
"Imposter," the cormorant said. "You are no raven."
The cormorant opened wide his hooked bill, ready to wring the crow's neck, and the crow pulled away.
"Swallow your pride," the cormorant said to the crow. "It is not poison. You will not perish."
"Oh, and I suppose you think you can be king here,"
the crow said. He stalked around in a belligerent circle, muttering to himself,
"All I ask is a little respect."
"Ye gods, what a tiresome bird," the fisherman thought. "Please," he said, "I am a simple fisherman. Tell me where I am." The pelican turned back to the fisherman,
his wingspan taking in the whole of the inlet as he swung from side to side. "This," he said, "is the Isle of the Dead." At this, the fisherman sank to his knees and bowed his head. The gods be praised, he had arrived at his destination. "At last," he said, "I am here." The cormorant stretched his neck down, his head now below the fisherman's, and tilted so the bird was looking up at him.
"We don't get many of your kind who are so happy to arrive."
His eye was a blue that put the fisherman in mind of his beloved's eyes. But the cormorant's eye was perfectly round, and his rapt gaze was unnerving. Staring into it made the fisherman feel queasy. He stood again and faced the three birds. "I have come for my beloved," he said, "who has preceded me."
"Ah,"
they all said, their chattering voices more bird-like than ever.
"Ah, ah, ah."
They clucked and cooed and cawed at one another at some length in the lingua franca of birds, very like a flock of chickens who have discovered a wayward chick. From time to time they looked at the fisherman, the cormorant with curiosity, the pelican with pity, the crow with scorn. The crow ended their discussion with a series of caws, louder and louder, until the cormorant and the pelican were silent.
"This is an old story," said the crow. "I suppose you want to take her back with you."
Back? The fisherman had never considered the possibility. "All I want," said he, "is to be with her for the rest of my days."
The crow began clawing at the sand.
"Nah, nah, nah," the crow said. "We don't allow that sort of thing here. You have no more days, you walking pile of whale scat. You're dead."
"He is not dead," the pelican said. "I saved him from death."
"Yeah," the crow said. "That was your mistake, not mine."
"Prima facie, he did not come on the canoe with the others," the cormorant said. "Ergo, he is not dead."
"Canoe?" the fisherman said. "What canoe?"
The cormorant and the pelican began to cluck each to the other, the pelican saying such things as, "He lives, he lives," and the cormorant, for his part, muttering,
"Habeas corpus, autem non est mortuarum, et non sequitur, non habemus potestatum,"
and other such baristical phrases.
Crow puffed up his chest feathers and spread his oily black wings. "Knock it off! Ah, 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 ah!" he said. "Quiet!"
The other two birds puffed up their chest feathers and spread their wings, and they were anything but quiet. They all three chanted and flapped in ripe cacophony, with the pelican, who was the shortest of the three, sometimes hopping from one foot to the other, all of them with their necks stretched up for added height, although this was of most benefit to the cormorant. They kept this fracas going for some time, and then, as if on some signal that only birds could see, they all stopped at once and turned to face the fisherman.
"Not an easy thing to do, finding your beloved," said the crow. "There are so many here."
Was that an overture to a bribe? The fisherman responded in kind. "I've come a long way to find her," he said. "Surely there is a way." The crow went back to clawing in the sand, and he uncovered a clam. He flipped it over, and then he covered it back up. The pelican and the cormorant clucked in alarm at this, but the crow spoke as if to cut them off.
"Just how much is your beloved worth to you?" he said.
The crow leaned in, the sharp tip of his beak a finger's width away from the fisherman's nose.
"Your right eye?" the crow said. "Your left eye?"
The fisherman wrinkled up his nose in disgust at the crow's carrion breath. The crow gave him a hard look.
"How about both eyes?"
The fisherman stared right back at him. He was not going to let this foul-mouthed maggot pie of a bird have the better of him. He thrust his chin forward, and he was about to speak his mind when the crow pecked at the fisherman's eye, plucking one out and swallowing it. The fisherman screamed, and he fell to the ground, half blind and moaning. Blood ran down his face. He clapped his hand over his empty eye socket.
"You puttock!" the cormorant cried. "You filthy Mouldiwarp!" He pointed a wingtip at the crow's gullet. "Give it back!"
The crow spread his wings and flapped them at the cormorant. The two birds faced off, puffing up their chest feathers, circling each other like pugilists, though the cormorant looked frightened and overmatched. Their heads bobbed, but before they could start jabbing at each other with their nebs, the pelican opened his wide wings and stepped in between them. All the while, the fisherman writhed in pain, his blood staining the sand.
"Must you?" the pelican said to the cormorant. "The last thing we need here is scuffling and name-calling while this man lies here half blind. And you," the pelican said to the crow, "please give back the man's eye. It is ignoble of you to treat a guest this way. What would Raven say?"
The crow, at the mention of Raven, cocked his head to the side.
"Ah, he laughed. "Not here to tell us, is he now?"
The pelican regarded the crow steadily, his yellow eyes opened wide.
"Then we must all rise to our best selves in his absence," he said.
His bird voice was calm, though his tail feathers trembled. The crow gazed back at the pelican, obstinate, until the cormorant stepped up with his wings spread, the two birds together crowding the crow with their wingspans.
"You are better than this," the pelican said. "Please give it back."
Thus was the crow persuaded to yield. The crow folded his wings and stepped back.
"Bullies,"
he muttered, but they paid him no mind. He herked the fisherman's eye up from his craw, and he opened his beak wide. The fisherman screamed again, horrified, and dug his fingers into the sand. The cormorant's long bill reached in and took the eye from the crow's mouth with the careful touch of an alchemist's pincers. He tilted his head, and he looked a question at the pelican. The pelican bobbed assent and brushed a gentle wing across the fisherman's brow. "Be still," he soothed. "Be still, still, still." The fisherman's mouth gaped. He was sweaty with pain, and his remaining eye, looking up at the birds, was wide with terror, but he nevertheless fell still. "Pull your hand back from your face," the pelican cooed, and the fisherman did so. Blood flowed down his cheek from his empty eye socket. The cormorant stood over him with his plucked eye at the ready. All his years as a sailor, he had avoided the surgeon's gruesome kit, and now he was in a surgery of birds. The cormorant put the fisherman's eye back in its bloody socket and regarded him for a moment. The fisherman began to grimace and to twist his head about as if he were trying to see upward and backward and side to side all at once. The pelican clucked and shook his head, and the cormorant nodded.
"My apologies," the cormorant said. "It's upside down."
"Be still,"
the pelican cooed again. And again the fisherman was momentarily soothed and fell still. The cormorant righted the wronged eye and stood back to admire his work. The pelican dug into his feathers as if he were rooting around for a particularly vicious feather mite, and then pierced his own breast with the sharp tip of his neb. When he drew forth his bill, a drop of blood glistened on the tip. He let the blood drip onto the fisherman's wounded eye. The pain the fisherman had felt was now something tiny and far away. And so the fisherman was healed.
story of the bear. Old man screaming as it grizz in the trees. This is how it went, how it all unfolded. Went to the woods with my smoke wagons loaded. The grizz. Ooh, yeah, big mama grizz.
My heart was thumping. My hands were shaking.
Upon a mountain of a bear with big black claws and a thick brown hair. On her back lay, she was 12 feet tall. I'd seen big bears, she was bigger than them all. The grizz. Ooh, yeah, big mama grizz.
And her jaws was snapping, the claws were scratching.
Trigger, but the ammo wasn't working. Go back to bear, I could swear she was smirking. She held me down cause I couldn't really run. Started biting on my fingers, baby, one by one. The grizz. Big mama grizz. Between her teeth, I could feel bones snapping. Over on a hill, hear the old man laughing. The whole time I was hoping I was dreaming. God, I always said I'd never go out screaming. The grizz. Mm-hmm. Big mama grizz.
I was quickly fading. I was done debating.
Myself, I was 12 feet tall. I was holding mama bear in my big brown paws. The grizz. Ooh, yeah, big mama grizz.
And there you have it. Penultimate episode of the season. Thank you to Stephen for reading. Please check out his book, The Ale House at the End of the World, published by Forest Avenue Press. You will see some lovely cover art designed by the remarkable Gigi Little. And also, endless thank yous to Shane Brown for providing the musical score to this episode. You can find Shane Brown at shanebrownmusic.com, and if you have Spotify, do yourselves a favor and check out his EP titled Cicada. And on August 15th, next Thursday, we will be airing our series finale, featuring the writings of Tracy Faust. I will have more to say about endings next week. Until then, I'm Jude Brewer. Thanks for listening.